which enabled us to conquer half the world without catching malaria. We already take isoniazid prophylaxis, or give isoniazid prophylaxis for TB, which is saving lives right now in Africa. People with AIDS get cotrimoxazole, Cetrin, as a prophylaxis for PCP, statins as a prevention for ARTEX, and of course, perhaps the closest parallel, although pregnancy is not a disease, the contraceptive pill, but they're very close parallels there. Next slide. We've tested PrEP for a very long time. The first animal study was in 1995. This is an old slide. I've got the first study in infants in 2003, but I've since heard that there were some studies looking at PrEP in infants even in the 90s. It's been a controversial intervention throughout its history, but this started, but we finally got a kind of positive result amongst gay men in 2010. That was the IPREX study. Next slide. But it was the two European studies, I think, that really clinched the effectiveness of PrEP. The first was the PROUD study, which was never intended as an effectiveness study. It was intended to see what behaviour change might occur if people knew they were taking PrEP and compared people who were taking PrEP with people who were offered it a year later, about 520-30 gay men. And next slide. It proved to be extremely effective. This is the slide showing the results, basically, and the infections are the horizontal lines, and the length of the bar is the period over which the infections may have occurred. And the three infections that did occur in people on, or allocated, I should say, to PrEP, one was in a person who clearly caught HIV more or less around the time he first started taking PrEP, probably beforehand, and the other two were in people who had long ago ceased to take PrEP. The overall effectiveness, balancing those two out, was 86%. So 17 out of 20 potential HIV infections stopped. Next slide. And the other study was IPAGAY in France, which experimented with a new regimen for PrEP, intermittent regimen, where you take a double dose of Truvada in the day before you think you might have sex. And if you do have sex, you take one on each of the two following days. At the time, a lot of people had reservations about this. It was thought it would be a difficult regimen to follow. But, next slide. This is the results slide from IPAGAY, presented in a slightly different way, but you can see there were only two infections in people allocated to Truvada. None of those people were taking PrEP at the time by their own account. So, and it came out with exactly the same effectiveness as PROUD, 86%. Next slide. So, I'm now going to pass you over to Valentina. We have the background for the PrEP studies there, but one of the things that Anastasia will be talking about is that we have, in Europe, centralized, state-administered and funded health systems who want to know if this intervention is value for money. And so Valentine is going to do a great presentation, not just on whether the PrEP, on the basis of PROUD and IPAGAY is value for money, but also generally on how these things are worked out. So if you can you unmute Valentina and mute me, Kevin?
I could. Actually, it's easier if Valentina pushes *7, actually.
Okay, Valentina, if you want to press *7, please proceed with your presentation.
Hello to everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. And now I'm going to mute myself, okay?
Okay.
So, thanks for inviting me to take part in this webinar, and thanks to Gus for the very kind words for me. So, as Gus mentioned, I'm going to talk about the cost effectiveness of PrEP among MSM. Next slide, please. And what I'm going to do is briefly touch on what is a cost effectiveness analysis, why cost-effectiveness analyses are performed and why are we evaluating whether PrEP is cost-effective, how is cost-effectiveness determined, and then what has been done in the UK in terms of evaluating whether PrEP is cost-effective among MSM. Next slide, please. So we do a cost-effectiveness analysis when a choice of healthcare intervention or program needs to be made. So in this case, as you can see, the choice is either introducing PrEP in a certain country or not. And cost-effectiveness is clearly not the only factor taken into account in the decision-making process, as issues such as equity, current needs, and priorities will be considered, but the cost-effectiveness does contribute to it. Whereas clinical trials evaluate alternatives, for example, PrEP versus no PrEP, based upon difference in health consequences, economic evaluation looks at both the costs and the health consequences and try to use these two information. If there was no limit to the healthcare budget and we knew, for example, from the PROW trial and the IPOGA trial in this case that an intervention was beneficial, then we would not need a cost-effectiveness analysis. We would simply introduce PrEP. Next slide, please. The issue is that each healthcare system has a budget constraint. And so for each new intervention that we introduce, we get some health benefit and usually some additional cost. And so at the same time, for this intervention to be introduced, some intervention will need to be displaced, and therefore some health is forgone, and some resources previously used for this intervention will be released to, in order to be able to introduce this new intervention. Next slide, please. So given that the overall goal is to maximize the health of the population with the available budget, when asking whether a new intervention is cost-effective, what we are asking is whether the health gain that we obtain from introducing this new intervention will likely to be greater than the health that is foregone because some money will be spent in order to introduce this new intervention. Or in other words, what we are trying to do is allocating resources so that overall, at a population level, we accrue the maximum number of healthy life years. So if any new intervention such as PrEP is introduced, which involves an increasing cost usually, there will be health foregone elsewhere in the health system. And so being cost-effective means that by introducing the new intervention, the health gain should outweigh the health lost. Next slide, please. So how do we determine the cost-effectiveness? So there are five main steps. So the first one is to determine the cost of the alternative intervention. In this case, the alternative intervention is usual care or the addition of PrEP to the HIV care. The second point is to measure and value the health outcomes. And this can be done in terms of HIV infection, life years, or quality-adjusted life years, which is what is more commonly used when evaluating cost-effectiveness. Next slide, please. So, quality-adjusted life year, often indicated as QALY, is a measure of health on a scale that goes from 0 to 1, when 0 represents death and 1 represents perfect health. And if you look at the graph on the bottom right, you can see that, let's assume we have a population with 7 people. What we do is, in each year, let's look in 2015, for each of these person, we will establish whether they are healthy or not, or which condition they have, and based on the condition, they will have a certain quality going from between 0 and 1. So in 2015, you can see that all the 7 patients are healthy, and so each of them will contribute to 1 quality-adjusted life years, and so in total, in 2015, we will have 7 quality-adjusted life years. In 2016, you can see that unfortunately patient 3 died and patient 5 is experiencing some health issues, so its quality of life is reduced. And so in 2016, there will be 5.5 quality adjusted life years. We do this for every year across the whole population and then sum these quality adjusted life years over time in order to have a total amount of quality adjusted life years in the scenario in which PrEP is introduced and in the scenario in which PrEP is not introduced. Next slide, please. And so once we have this health outcome for the two scenarios that we are considering, and we have, again, the cost for these two scenarios, what we do, we calculate the incremental cost-effectiveness ratio. And this is simply the ratio between the additional cost, so the cost of introducing PrEP on top of the usual care minus the cost of simply the usual care, and we divide that by the health benefit that PrEP is producing. And this is called incremental cost fairness ratio, or ICER, and it's basically how much it costs to gain one healthy life years by introducing PrEP. Next slide, please. And finally, once we have calculated this ICER, which is really the main measure to evaluate cost effectiveness, we compare this to a threshold ICER, sometimes called the cost effectiveness threshold or willingness to pay threshold. This is country specific. In the UK, this threshold is around £20,000 per quality adjusted life years gained. And this really varies enormously across countries, and the degree of constraint depends on the society priorities and degree of resources equity. But the principle will apply to any society that wants to get the most healthy life years given the resources they have available. So if we adopt an intervention with an ICER, in this case for the UK, is above 20,000 quality adjusted life years, per quality adjusted life year gained, what happens is that more health is lost or foregone from the commitment of resources to that intervention than results from its provision. Next slide, please. And so if in an ideal scenario, what it would happen is that for each intervention producing health, we will know what is their ICER. So for each intervention, we will know what is the cost of gain one additional healthy life years with that specific intervention. And we will know the total cost of implementing the intervention in a country, and that's indicated by the width of each bar. And basically, what we would do, we will order them from the one that allows to gain quality-adjusted life years at the lower cost to the one that allows to gain life years at the highest cost. And then basically, we will introduce them until we have used the entire healthcare budget. And in this way, basically, we'll produce the maximum of healthy life years given the budget we have. If we introduce, for example, the last bar, which is this intervention which is associated with a higher cost to gain an additional healthy life years, then we will not maximize the health across our population given the budget we have. Next slide, please. Okay, so what's happening in the UK in terms of cost effectiveness of PrEP among MSM? So two groups actually are working on evaluating the cost effectiveness of PrEP among MSM, Public Health England and UCL, which is where I'm from. They are using two different, slightly different models. We are using a dynamic model, which simply means that the fact that an infection is averted because a person is on PrEP is reflected even in people who are not receiving PrEP, because overall the HIV incidence will be reduced. We are looking at slightly different interventions. We are looking at offering PrEP over 1 year when we are looking at offering PrEP and people using when having condomless sex. They initially focused on MSM with an HIV incidence of around 3.3%, which is similar to what has been observed in people in MSM with bacterial STIs, or we consider in different groups. We're both looking at the cost effectiveness over a lifetime frame, and it's quite standard when conducting cost effectiveness analysis. But we're both still working, and in particular considering different eligibility criteria, more similar to PROUD, and actually still refining the cost. In particular, the estimates were quite outdated, and now we are trying to use more recent costs. Next slide, please. So these are the results, not from the model I'm using, but from the Public Health England model. And as I mentioned, they looked at an intervention in high-risk MSM with an HIV incidence of 3.3% in the first year. And they concluded that it was unlikely this to be cost effective at a 64% effectiveness of PrEP, and if there was risk compensation, because this would give an incremental cost effectiveness ratio of £34,000 per quality adjusted life years gained. And they said it would become less severe if target population year one incidence is even lower. And they found that the factors that were affecting more the cost effectiveness was the target population CR1 HIV incidence, the patient's adherence, and therefore the disease effectiveness, and the PrEP drug cost. And so the conclusion from their model is that substantial price reduction of antiretroviral drugs used for PrEP is necessary to give assurance of cost effectiveness for an affordable public health program of sufficient size. I'm not working on these models, I'm just summarizing what are the results. Next slide, please. And this is what we have been working on. So we looked at introducing PrEP in potentially five different groups of the MSM population. What this graph is showing is the number of MSM projected to be on PrEP in these five hypothetical scenarios. So the blue one is when we are assuming that men who tested for HIV and who had condomless sex are eligible, and assuming that there is an increase in HIV testing, so people come forward to look for PrEP. So it's a very wide scenario. The second one, so that 14% of men will be receiving PrEP in 2016, up to almost 100,000 in 15 years in time. Then we look at targeting men with condomless sex with at least one short-term partner in the last 3 months. In red, people with condomless sex with 5 short-term partners or more in the last year. In pink, condomless sex, people had condomless sex in the last 3 months and presented with bacterial STI. And then the green one is, again, is similar to the scenario in blue, but simply assuming that there is no increase in condomless sex or HIV testing. And so simply the people start using PrEP, the population that are using PrEP is almost half by 15 years compared to the wider scenario, but a similar HIV incidence. So these are basically all, we looked at practical way of targeting these men by representing different levels of HIV incidence. So next slide, please. In terms of cost, the costs that we included are the costs related to HIV care and then the costs related to PrEP. And just to give you an idea, we assume that the cost of 1 year on ART would cost around £11,000. And this is using the cost of drugs. I indicated a triple, but we will actually use the distribution of treatment that I used. From the British National Formulary, we cost estimate of the healthcare from back that came from a few years ago, and then cost of monitoring people on antiretroviral drugs. And then 1 year on PrEP, we estimate it would cost around £5,000. Next slide, please. So when we now combine the two information that we are available, so the cost of HIV care on the treating PrEP and the cost and the health benefit that it could be produced by introducing PrEP. So you can see that in this graph, on the horizontal axis, basically we have the health benefit of introducing PrEP in this different population. So the change in quality-adjusted life years compared to a scenario indicated by the dot in blue where PrEP is not introduced. And on the vertical axis, we have the additional cost of introducing PrEP compared to if PrEP, a scenario in which PrEP is not introduced. And so if you now look at the blue dots, in which PrEP is introduced widely in the MSM population, you can see that this will produce a health benefit of around 100,000 quality-adjusted life years, in addition compared to if PrEP is not introduced. And it will cost around £6,000 million of pounds extra compared to the scenario in which PrEP is not introduced. And this is over an 8 years time frame. And so now if we calculate this ICER, you can see the ICER is around £57,000, which is above the cost effectiveness threshold in the UK, which is around £20,000, is the area indicated, the shaded area in grey, which can vary between £13,000 and £30,000. But you can see that if instead we look at population, for example, MSM presented with bacterial STI, or simply we have a smaller group receiving PrEP, then it does become cost-effective because the incremental cost-effectiveness threshold is around £9,000, which is below the cost-effectiveness threshold. And actually, when we target men with 5 short-term partner or more in the last year, I'm talking about condomless sex here, you can see that actually we can have a saving in cost. So introducing PrEP will be cheaper than simply keep doing what we are currently doing and not introducing PrEP. Next slide, please. So then we looked at, this was assuming that the cost of drugs and the cost of treatment and the cost of healthcare will remain at the current level. If we now look at what happens if the cost of drugs for treatment and for PrEP are reduced by 50% on the left and by 80% on the right, you can see that now all the points shift down. So this means that if you look at the graph with 50% reduction, even a wide introduction of PrEP becomes borderline cost effective with an ISR of 23, around 24,000. And actually, offering PrEP to people with condometabolic infection or more with bacterial STI or a smaller PrEP program in people with condometabolic sex, all become cost-saving, and even more when we look at a reduction of 8%. Next slide, please. And so our preliminary conclusion is that this suggests that the use of PrEP among MSM in the UK is cost-effective when either it's targeted to men with 5 shots or more in the last year without using condom or presented an STI, or if the cost of drugs is assumed at least is lower than the current full list price once the patent expires. And this has been seen for other antiviral drugs that have already become available as a generic. And then, or where there is no increase in condomless sex and not increase in HIV tests, so that as a consequence of PrEP, so that the size of the PrEP program is smaller. And then next slide, please. So I would just finally last to thank the people I work with, in particular Andrew Phillips, the Public Health England team that provided the results from their model, and thank you very much for your attention. I would be very happy to take any question you have.
Thank you, Valentina. That's wonderful. This is Gus here. Can you hear me all?
Yes.
Yeah, sorry, you can't all answer. Okay, well, I'm going to allow just a couple of minutes of technical questions. I've explained some of the abbreviations in the chat. We'll have a general discussion at the end. I'm aware that I've kind of thrown you all in the deep end with the most technical presentation, but if there are things that are genuinely puzzling you, please do press star 7 to unmute yourself and ask a question of Valentina or of one of the panel. Nothing.
Hello.
There. Hello. Who's this?
This is Giulio Maio Corbandi from Italy.
Hello.
Hi, Giulio. And thank you, Valentina, for your brilliant presentation. I would like to understand about the third hypothesis you gave in your conclusions. How likely it seems to you as a researcher, this hypothesis of no increase in condomless sex and no increase in HIV testing uptake?
I think in the PROW trial, we didn't see an increase in sexual behavior. I think it's very difficult to know whether there will be whether we pick one. So in the other scenario, we simply look at offering PrEP to people who already come for HIV testing. I think it's very difficult to know whether more people will come forward to test for HIV because PrEP is available and because they want to start PrEP. And so I think that's why we consider different coverage. So a wide scenario where we assume there is this increase, and a scenario in which we simply assume that the level of HIV testing remains the current model. I think we can just look at different scenarios. It's difficult to know. I personally think there will be interest and there will be an increase in HIV testing as PrEP becomes available, but we will see.
Okay. Axel wants to know, what is the time frame for the number of sex partners?
So in the scenario, we looked at condomless sex in the last 3 months.
Yep. Right. Okay. I have a couple of other questions, but I think it's better to wait for them after the other presentations. Any other specifically on Valentina's models and on cost effectiveness? Okay. A good general comment. I think, obviously, use of condoms amongst gay men is either... It's difficult to say whether it will hold steady or whether it's going down. I think it may be going down generally as a sort of background thing. It's very difficult to say whether this will be accelerated by the use of PrEP or not. But I think that the thing is that modelers like Valentina, in a way, have to kind of put in what could happen rather than what they think will happen, because, after all, the whole point of the model is to forecast what might happen in, you know, worst-case scenarios and things like that, and also to test them against the real world. Anyway, we can ask more general questions afterwards. So thanks very much. Kevin, I have Daniela's presentation come up, and I was expecting Anastasia's.
Okay, well then I have it out of order. Just give me a second.
can make this happen. Just give me a
second.
We can
swap otherwise.
Well, no, we can do it in the order. I misunderstood the order.
Here we are. Okay, well, I'll now introduce Anastasia Farris, who's a fantastic epidemiologist from the ECDC. Because we're running a bit late, I'm going to go straight on and say, Anastasia, please talk to us about challenges to the implementation of PrEP in Europe, and unmute yourself by pressing *7.
Okay. Thanks so much, Gus. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, and I'm going to unmute myself.
Yeah, thank you, Gus, and thanks also to EACG and greetings to other colleagues that I've heard here on the seminar, on the webinar. I am from ECDC. We work with the 30 countries in the European Union and European Economic Area, mostly on surveillance of infectious disease, and specifically I work with HIV, but we also work on guidance and issues of scientific advice. And we've had a lot of growing questions from member states, both from public health authorities, which are the normal bodies that we work with, and also our NGO partners and civil society, about PrEP. And so when Gus invited me to reflect on these, I've tried to pull in a lot of the questions that we've gotten. And these are not things that we at ECDC have solved at all, and they're not things I think that most of us in Europe have solved, but these are the things on the horizon that we've identified as things that will need to be tackled toward the implementation of PrEP in the coming years. Next slide, please. This is a framework. There's many frameworks that deal with getting evidence into policy and practice, and this is one that Don Smith at CDC presented at a PrEP meeting recently in Geneva at WHO. And I thought it was helpful to think about the fact that, you know, we're all very excited about the results that have come out of PROUD and IPRGAY, that we have European results on PrEP. We can also in some way look at the efficacy of the results from outside of Europe, of course, from IPREX and other studies on PrEP. But we're really pretty early in the process toward generating evidence and now have moved on to these stages of synthesis. You know, we're trying to understand what does this mean for us. And I'm trying to formulate policies out of this and apply those to practice. And Valentina gave a really excellent presentation now on cost. And I think that this is the first thing that is normally mentioned in relation to PrEP is the cost. And now these studies are coming out and we'll need to expand them to other settings in Europe. But beyond cost, we need to look at other issues as well before we're actually ready to implement. And we have some of these covered already. Some of the questions have been addressed through PROUD, but we still have a lot of questions remaining. And so I'll reflect on a few of those challenges. Next slide, please. As I mentioned already, efficacy is something that we don't need to discuss here. I think it's becoming very clear. Also, effectiveness in terms of real-life settings. We saw through the PROUD study what would happen if you implement in an STI clinic model. Then the next thing that often policymakers look to is the individual and public health rationale for doing something, the public health action. And in the next slide, we can see the basic numbers. I've already showed some of them. But in the next slide, please, Kevin. The HIV infections. And in the EU as a whole, in the 30 countries, we do see that HIV infections do remain high, but they're increasing among men who have sex with men in our region. And that's the only population where we do see this increase. And that goes throughout basically all of the countries in the EU. I think there are four where we don't see an increase, but it's more or less a stable situation. But everywhere else, we see increasing numbers of infections diagnosed. Prevalence figures also are difficult we don't have them for all EU countries, but among men who have sex with men, prevalence is definitely higher than 5%, and in some countries much higher, in about a third of EU countries. And so we see that there is a public health rationale. Obviously, this trickles down to the individuals who are the affected population. And we have talked a lot about men who have sex with men as because of what we see in the epidemiological trends, but there may be other populations where there is justification to offer PrEP in Europe, and those discussions will be important, and looking at local epidemiology and risk factors will also be important going forward. Next slide, please. So we look at then other issues are regulatory, and this is something that is quite important for many countries in terms of implementing PrEP. They need to have regulatory approval for the use of Truvada as a the prophylactic medication, and it varies a little bit by country whether they need to have European Medicines Agency approval in order to implement. Some countries can use a drug that's already approved off-label, others cannot. And as of yet, the most recent information that we have, and it has been difficult to get clear information, there hasn't been an application yet by Gilead, who's the producer of Truvada, to the European Medicines Agency, and we can expect maybe now that that could happen now that European results have been published just last week in The Lancet. But this is an important barrier and something that need to be attended to for some countries to implement other than in a demonstration project setting. Other things that are important in many settings are having guidelines, and there are, of course, you know, global guidelines. WHO recommends PrEP in global guidelines. But several countries have mentioned in discussions with the CDC that they would like to see regional guidelines, and this may be included now in the updates, for example, of the European AIDS Clinical Society, maybe including PrEP. We'll find out in October if how it is included, but also towards implementation. There will be WHO's producing implementation guidelines for the global setting, but we'll need to look and see, do we need something that's context-specific for Europe? And many countries also like to have national guidelines where, you know, this is how we will do things in our country. And these will need to address issues like safety, efficacy, also indications for when PrEP will be recommended, contraindications. And we can share a lot of experiences from global guidelines. This doesn't differ so much across settings. Next slide, please. Yep. And so the health systems in Europe are what make the implementation of PrEP perhaps a little bit more challenging, but also in terms of the initial decision. And this is because in Europe, we tend to have health provision, which is state financed. And in some countries, this happens through one national system. In other countries, there's a national health insurance where you're then reimbursed. We do have some settings where we have mixes where some private insurance or out-of-pocket payments also supplements the way that people receive healthcare. But generally in Europe, we tend to, this tends to be a more centralized decision, and the financing tends to be more centralized to make a very sweeping generalization about the complex health systems that we have across the 30 countries. And this, of course, affects the decisions on what the payment threshold would be for PrEP, and that will differ by country based on resource level, and also based on the incidence of HIV in the subpopulation. And I would also mention that not only the healthcare provision, but also in many cases the drug procurement, the way that drugs are procured might be centralized in one setting, often through an infectious disease hospital, for example. And these issues need to then be addressed if PrEP is used for preventative means. Next slide illustrates this a bit, and this is that when we start to use medicines as in a preventative way, typically in Europe we've seen most of the HIV prevention is organized through NGOs. It's sometimes outsourced by national public health agencies to NGOs, sometimes completely funded by NGOs or often a mix. And then we see, you know, treatment obviously is happening mostly in hospitals and through clinical bodies. And now with PrEP we have this unique opportunity where treatment is prevention generally. It needs to be a comprehensive package, and we need to bring prevention and treatment closer together in order to deliver PrEP well. But this needs a lot of collaboration and task sharing, and needs the forging of new relationships which perhaps haven't existed in countries. And I think will ultimately strengthen prevention, but it will cause the need for new collaboration. Next slide, please. And so one of the questions is where to target, and this isn't something that we have answers to yet, and this, again, will differ based on country, based on the epidemiological scenario, and will often differ very much within countries. But there are these questions in terms of would one take a risk group approach, would one take a risk assessment approach, such as what Valentina has shown in terms of, you know, indicators, condomless anal intercourse episodes, STI diagnosis, as you also mentioned, Valentina. Some countries have looked at maybe looking at post-exposure prophylaxis if there's multiple uses. We saw that with the IPRGAY results that many of the men who recruited themselves into IPRGAY had also used a lot of PEP. Maybe that could be an indicator. Or potentially this concept of seasons of risk, and so certain periods which where one expects to or would perhaps have more sexual contact, whether it be a vacation period or other types of things, migration scenarios, et cetera, for those at high risk. And then I think what was very interesting to see from the Proud and Ypres results, many of those who actually recruited themselves into this study were the right people to be there and to be receiving PrEP. And perhaps we can learn from that, that people know themselves when they need PrEP, and perhaps just those who ask for it are the ones who need it with some guidance. And so that would be another approach. And so this is something that we'll need to discuss and agree on in each country when considering where PrEP may be first rolled out and then perhaps expanded. Next slide, please. Just went back to the epidemiological data. I think something important, though, to mention is that in the HIV notification, so these are men who are diagnosed, MSM who are diagnosed in all of the 30 countries of Europe, one-third of them are under 30 years of age at diagnosis. And while some of those may have been infected recently, others may have been infected much before the age of 30. And so I think it's quite important that we look at, if we're looking to give PrEP to the right people, we need to make sure we're getting them before they're infected, obviously, and that means looking to new groups, often of very young men, for example, in this case, and where are they best reached and how are they best offered prevention modalities such as PrEP. Next slide. And then another issue in Europe is that some of the largest countries will have different considerations. The largest countries with the biggest numbers of, for example, MSM who could benefit, whereas where we see the biggest proportional increases, so the numbers have been small in the past, and then we see the proportion of increase are countries in Central and Eastern Europe, and that's where perhaps the numbers, the health system constraints may be larger, and the numbers of men potentially receiving PrEP might be lower initially. And so this is something I think in terms of an equity concept across Europe. Obviously, provision is a national decision, but both within countries, between cities and then rural areas, as well as between countries in Europe, there will be these differences in terms of the numbers that would be reached through such a program. Next slide. And so this has already been mentioned a bit, but we do have different care models, and I think that this will also be very dependent on the way that countries organize services. But infectious disease clinics are already prescribing antiretrovirals to patients, people who are living with HIV, and these are the types of providers, practitioners, doctors who tend to be aware of PrEP already. They're the ones who are attending the conferences where these presentations are being given, reading the journals where we are discussing pre-exposure prophylaxis. However, they're taking care of predominantly people who are living with HIV, and so they wouldn't necessarily come into contact in most countries with other than partners, regular partners. They wouldn't be coming into contact with a lot of potential PrEP users in many settings. STI or GUM clinics would have a wider reach, but not all countries in Europe have very strong networks of STI or GUM clinics. And so this is not necessarily the place where PrEP could be based. And then there's also issues which need to be addressed in many STI clinics. They're episodic care, and not all STI clinics have follow-up mechanisms where they see patients across time and follow up. Some do, but that's mixed. Primary care settings are of course, other settings where PrEP could be provided, but that also requires partnering with primary care doctors and a lot of education amongst providers who may not know that PrEP, be very PrEP aware yet. And then drug treatment centers is also potentially for people living or people who inject drugs a setting where one may consider delivering PrEP. And that would also need partnering then with psychiatry and drug addiction specialists. And then we are hearing some discussion in some settings in Europe about trying to look at demonstration projects for community settings, the delivery of PrEP in community settings, and it will be exciting to hear more about those as the planning goes forward.
Okay, I'm gonna red flag you slightly. Anastasia, can you
hurry
move on a bit?
Yeah, I just have a few slides.
I know what's coming, so I know that you're going to present some brilliant stuff, but
This is a slide from the EMIS study, which many of you are familiar with, but a very important landmark study of MSM in Europe, which was done over the internet, and it just demonstrates that the last HIV testing by study participants, so gay male respondents in Europe, differed very much. And I think it demonstrates that, you know, in some settings, most of the last testing was provided at a community site, whereas in other places it was private practice or hospital. And this means that, you know, HIV testing sites giving people results that they're negative obviously are places to refer people onward to PrEP, but this also, you know, our partners in terms of who then would be the PrEP referrers would differ a lot based on where the HIV testing is being organized. Next slide.
And I think I might have lost the train. I just want to make sure I'm on the right. Am I in the
yep,
right?
Yep, you're
line?
Fine. You're okay.
Good. Okay, good.
Yep.
Good. Thank you.
Yeah. And finally, we need to look at the needs of the providers of PrEP. So some of the people who will be providing PrEP don't yet know it exists, such as the primary care doctors mentioned earlier. They may not be very comfortable prescribing antiretroviral treatment or with sexual health counseling. There may not be systems in place for the follow-up and monitoring of patients in, for example, STI settings. And then partnering with clinical societies, trainings, and like hotlines and things may be possible solutions to this, which we'll need to discuss going on. Next slide. And then this is from another study, but it illustrates that in many settings, particularly in the central and eastern parts of Europe, many gay male respondents, when they said, is any healthcare provider aware of my sexual orientation, upwards of 70% in many of the countries in central and eastern Europe said no. And so how then can we target people who may benefit from PrEP when, in fact, providers of healthcare may not be able to be asking or aware of or told about risk situations. Next slide. Demonstration projects are being planned in Europe. We have heard about projects in Amsterdam and Antwerp and several other European countries in 2016 and beyond. There's a lot of discussion, a lot of questions about whether to do projects in many European countries, and they will be providing really important information, which the documentation of the experiences, like both the qualitative and outcomes data, will be extremely important to share and inform our efforts in Europe in terms of who will request and take PrEP in different settings, how often, so intermittent or regular dosing or switching back and forth between, how long will people need PrEP for, like to feed these types of models that Valentina showed, what is the duration of a PrEP user? We don't know that yet. What are the best care models and referral pathways for different populations? And then what are the longer-term effects in terms of adherence, STI rates, the uptake, as well as quality of life and sexual health for the individuals who are taking PrEP? Next slide. And then finally, the users. There'll need to be a lot of work in terms of PrEP implementation on informing users that it exists when programs do get set up, and then giving them information about, you know, where they can access PrEP, whether it's effective, dangerous. Stigma-related issues have been seen a bit in the U.S., and community groups partnering with public organizations will have a really important role here. And we've seen some examples from the United States as well, and already in Europe, of social media and, like, Facebook groups where there's been a lot of, like, user-to-user, peer-to-peer examples and support. And last slide, I think. Yeah. And then I think last slide, Kevin, the graph, yeah. And this is just to say that I think many of us are maybe it went by, but the scale-up does take time, and that I think it went too far, Kevin. In the United States, there's, you know, between the beginning of the guidelines and implementation and approval of PrEP in 2012, it took a couple of years before they really saw very much scale-up in action, and this is something that we can also expect in Europe, that while many of us are impatient for implementation to happen, policy, you know, getting policies into practice does take time, and so we can continue to advocate, but while being a bit patient. And I just like to end by saying that there's been a lot of momentum. It's exciting to see a lot of interest, and some of the factors related to the health systems here in Europe will make the funding and implementation issues complex, but it also provides, I think, an excellent opportunity to work together to address and to document some of these solutions at policy level within care provision, provider and patient levels. That's it. Thank you very much.
Brilliant. Thanks very much, Anastasia. A great wide-ranging background presentation. Well, Kevin's reeling with the slides back. Any questions? I do have one from somebody who's been waiting very patiently.
Thank you.
And who I'm going to introduce because he doesn't have audio because he's accessing the presentation from Egypt, who is a HIV consultant from Egypt, Amma Gohar. Who has a couple of questions. One I'll ask after Daniela's presentation, but the first one is, who do you see providing PrEP in sort of resource-stretched countries? He gets his meds for his HIV patients from AFAI, which is a charity, third sector organization in America, AIDS for AIDS International, as we know all about other ones, including the AIDS Healthcare Foundation, of course. Where do people envisage PrEP being sourced from in countries that aren't going to have the resources to give it from centralized healthcare systems? So that's a big question, isn't it?
Am I still on here?
Yeah.
I can. I don't. Will not pretend to have easy answers to that. It's really complex. And what we hear from many of the countries that are having difficulty treating patients is, who are living with HIV is that this is a dream. Provision of PrEP through the centralized system is a dream and not possible. But I think that this is where costing analyses will be important because if it can be cost-saving in the long run, that may convince healthcare providers or healthcare policymakers that it needs to be implemented, and then also where once patents expire and PrEP may become cheaper, there may be more solutions. But I think what we need to avoid in Europe is a situation where those who have money can pay out of pocket, and then others who may be at very high risk don't have access.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. I think I'm going to go straight on to Daniela's presentation because I think some of the questions of the waiting may be answered by hers as well. So I'm going to go straight on to Daniela, who is from the French, the biggest French HIV NGO, which is ED, who were very involved in the design and implementation of the IPA-GAY study, and she's going to talk about the important role community involvement in IPA-GAY and other PrEP studies. And on a personal note, of course, I can say that I'm an embodiment of that myself, as I was co-chair of the PROUD study and was asked to be that by the principal investigator. So we've both been involved in the European studies. Anyway, Daniela, please unmute yourself, *7, and do your presentation.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great.
And the others, remember to mute yourself. Okay, go on.
Okay, thank you for inviting me today. It's great to be with you. And as you can see, I will be presenting our experience in forming and involving community or communities in advocacy and research on PrEP. Next slide. As you know, ED was set up in 84 by Daniel Defer and is the leading HIV AIDS organization in France. Our main objective is to provoke change in the society, and we want to influence administrative and legal systems in order to improve the living conditions of people living with HIV. In order to achieve this social change, we use a community-based approach, and we consider that autonomy needs to be fostered in order to enable people to go forward, to solve the difficulties they face, and to mobilize themselves. To avoid the service pitfall that we can observe, for example, in the health system, we make sure that those who are infected and or affected by HIV/AIDS are informed and involved and the center of decision-making processes, projects, and their implementation. This enables people to mobilize themselves and to take action, to be active rather than passive clients. This is our way of working, not only regarding PrEP, but also to treatment, access to treatment tasks, health rights for migrants, education regarding injecting drug users, and many other topics. Next slide. So that doesn't work. There is supposed to be an animation, so I will just describe it. Regarding PrEP, the first thing that we should know is that we have there are main targets and partners. In France, we have worked at very different levels. with the community, with other national NGOs, and also with international NGOs. Thus, we undertook community consultations. An inter-associative committee was created to accompany eBurgay. Exchanges among our volunteers regarding PrEP were promoted so they could speak with other people dropping it at ED about this new prevention tool. And we also work with medical and social researchers and as a co-investigator in the eBurgay project with the agency in charge of research on HIV, INRS, which meant working on the protocol, taking part in the decisions regarding ancillary studies, etc. As a health provider, eBurgay has undoubtedly been a unique experience since community peers have worked hand-in-hand with medical staff, changing the care provided to participants. Finally, at present, we are working with different institutions like the Health Minister or the French National Agency for Medicines and Health Product Safety in order to change the law so all people at high risk for HIV would have access to PrEP. In other words, we conduct actions on the field, we conduct community-based research, and we strongly advocate using the information that we have collected thanks to action and research. These three areas work together. Slide. Here you can see some examples of the actions at our drop-in centers and premises, community-based testing, outreach services, IDU services, legal support, etc. Slide. As for advocacy, here are some key issues. We ask to the French National Agency for Medicines and Health Product Safety, ANSM in French, for a temporary authorization to use Truvada's PrEP. In fact, we had to ask twice before receiving an answer several months later. By the end of 2014, the ANSM created a working group to evaluate the risks and benefits of PrEP, and a report should be delivered by the end of this month. It must be noted that different organizations like ACTA, Paris, The Warning, ED, were consulted. When this first report is made available, a second commission will have to set up another group to study the delivery framework. Here, we will advocate regarding the necessity of peer support. eBurgay has shown that PrEP efficacy depends on adherence, and this adherence strongly depends on the support provided by the community peers. Slide. Unfortunately, our health minister is quite reluctant and hesitant, and she keeps asking for reports from different health institutions. In the coming weeks, the French HIV experts report in HIV, the Rapport Morla, will be available and will encourage PrEP delivery. Slide. Here you can see some pictures of the 2015 Paris Pride March, which was an opportunity to put the focus on PrEP in order to widely inform about PrEP. We exchanged information regarding this campaign with London, who also focused on PrEP. Slide. And then there is European-level advocacy. It is necessary that the different associations asking for PrEP take advantage of the experience of other associations and to develop a joint European advocacy plan. I will say that thanks to EATG, this European advocacy plan seems more and more dynamic and inspiring. Slide. Let's move to our involvement in research and in more insight to our involvement in the eBurgay trial. We became a scientific partner of the trial for several reasons. Firstly, because PrEP was a means to fulfill a need of a gay man exposed to HIV that dropped in at ED. Secondly, our participation was a means to avoid a purely biomedical approach by ensuring counseling and coaching regarding sexual health. Thirdly, we could integrate a psychosocial approach that is closer to our daily work in the field. Fourthly, research is a way of changing society, of changing the laws, and eBurgay was a project that could have an impact on the future of an open-label access in Europe. Finally, and as you can read on the slide, there were also potential benefits of an intermittent schema in comparison with a continuum PrEP. We must keep in mind that this schema focuses on behavior, the gay man knows if he wants and when he's going to have sex, instead of on prescription. That is only the indication of doctors. Slide. Hypergay obtained great results on efficacy and adherence. These results are strongly associated with all what happened in addition to medical monitoring. Sorry for the diagram, but the important thing to notice is that the light blue box in the middle describes what the medical setting provides, STI consultation, tablets, adherence measures, vaccination, blood sampling, treatment if necessary, and a date for the next appointment. If you focus on the rest of the diagram, you will see the role of the 10 community peers, 9 men and 1 woman, participating in the Hypergay trial. They have the first contact with the participants to explain the trial. They provide sexual health counseling both before and after testing, distinct from VCT, and are available if the participant has questions or doubts. In addition, they conduct focus groups to facilitate exchanges among Hypergay participants, since the participation to such a trial is far from a trivial affair, even now in the open-label extension. The individualized sexual health coaching proposed throughout Hypergay trial is closely correlated to the good results regarding adherence and consequently efficacy. This coaching helps participants to develop an individualized health improvement plan, allowing a long-term global health strategy. It is vital to keep this in mind, since it would be naive to believe that PrEP delivery in a classical health system would provide the same quality of service by only prescribing and monitoring PrEP use. Slide. In this slide, you can see an oral poster presented at ETH Impact Conference, and that it will be hopefully published in the coming months. It is an example of the effort that we are making to valorize and to showcase this community work. Slide. In 2014, we conducted a survey that had two main objectives. Firstly, to describe HIV-negative people's awareness of PrEP, their willingness to take PrEP, and their current intention to use it. This information, especially regarding what are the populations informed or not, will allow us to better target our campaigns and our actions in the field. In the second place, we wanted to describe informal PrEP use. Slide. The third result is that among these more than 3,000 respondents, only 33% were aware of what PrEP was before filling in the questionnaire. There is still a lot of work to do regarding information. As for the intention to use PrEP in a global health setting, as the one proposed by Hypergay, we found that the factors associated to this intention were being a migrant, being a heterosexual man, being already an informal PrEP user, and belonging to the most at-risk population. Finally, almost 5% of the respondents declare informal PrEP use. Slide. Let me take 30 seconds to present you the results regarding PrEP knowledge. As you can see, the levels of information are quite heterogeneous, but what we do find particularly interesting is that even among gay men coming to an HIV association, only 46% of them have heard once in their lifetime about PrEP. Slide. Here you can read the informal PrEP results. The key messages are: there is a non-negligible percentage of informal PrEP users. There are mainly MSM, but there are also heterosexual men and women, and there are mainly reporting high or very high risk for infection practices. These results on informal PrEP use has actively been presented to health authorities. The issue is not only to decide if we authorize or not PrEP access. The issue is that PrEP is already being used, and we have to ensure that PrEP users have an adequate monitoring and sexual health coaching. Slide. The informal PrEP results of the Flash PrEP survey were quite shocking, and the French Research Agency on HIV funded a qualitative study on informal PrEP use. The objective is to collect information on the experience of informal PrEP users in order to design a more appropriate delivery framework when the temporary authorization will arrive. slide. What are the next steps? First of all, to continue our national advocacy strategy, we will advocate for ensuring access to PrEP for the hyper-gay volunteers since the trial will finish in March 2016. We will keep advocating for obtaining an open label use of PrEP for all the populations at risk. We have asked to the French Society of Doctors Against AIDS to establish guidelines for an appropriate monitoring for Infama PrEP users. We showcase the work done by the community peers in Ypres. And this last weekend, the board of directors of our association decided to put all the means necessary to ensure access to PrEP for those people needing it pending the health minister authorized an open label use. As for the European advocacy strategy, we are working together with different stakeholders as the ECDC and EATG. We are in contact with the European Medicine Agency with Gillian in order to obtain a marketing authorization for the prevention use of Truvada. And finally, and regarding research, we work in the scientific valorization of the results of Ypres and Flash PrEP, and we are willing to develop a European Flash PrEP. Their results can be used at a European level, but also a national level by the different associations participating in this adventure. Slide. This is only to remind that community involvement is not only a source for recruitment, but it has to be informed, involved, and empowered if we want to succeed in an appropriate sexual health offer, including PrEP. Slide. Thanks a lot for your attention.
Okay, thanks very much, Daniela. And now we've only got probably about 10 minutes, stretching it a bit for questions. We always overrun. But I think now is the time I can throw the floor open to questions generally. I do have another one from Emma here, but it's a very good one, basically, of, you know, we can't provide PrEP unless we inform patients and unless they get to hear about it. I think Daniela has to a certain extent addressed that question. But if there's other people involved in other PrEP campaigning and perhaps setting up some of the trials going on in Europe at the moment, it might be interesting to have comment how you spread awareness of PrEP amongst the community and also, as I say, amongst possible providers of it. That's just one area of questioning that people might want to chat about. Anyway, if you have a question and want to join the discussion, press *7 to unmute yourself. Can you hear me, everybody? Just checking.
Yes, Gus, I can hear you.
Okay.
Hello there. Hi, my name's Alex. I'm a health service researcher based in Brighton in the UK. I have a question for perhaps all of the speakers, all or any. I wonder what are your feelings about community organisations advocating the individual import of generic drugs, generic PrEP, and bypassing health services in the various countries? It's something that's been emerging more and more in the UK, and today we've seen HIV iBase in the UK start to distribute information advocating and enabling people to do that. I'd be interested in people's comments on that.
I think that is a very interesting question, and it's something that Anastasia addressed actually in her last answer about, you know, you want to see sort of relative equality in provision of PrEP, but I would be very interested in people's comments on this because I think it is happening more and more. And indeed in London, the Dean Street Clinic here actually does have a private clinic which provides PrEP for people who can afford to buy it. Any comments? Remember to unmute yourself if you've got something to say.
Gus, this is Anastasia. I think, as you've already mentioned again, the equity concept is quite important. And I think that it's difficult to, you know, ensure follow-up systems in terms of, like, regular STI testing and ensuring that acute infection is not in place before people start to take PrEP. So, I mean, ideally, there should be systems in place to provide PrEP. But if health systems do not provide what people are demanding and needing, I think we will start to see more and more of the this being organized, you know, and sourced locally by sort of in these types of efforts. And then hopefully health systems would respond to that or would, you know, make that not necessary. But I think it will be important to document and I know that is being talked about, for example, in the UK.
Yes, I mean, I think that we need to continue presenting a really good public health case for PrEP, at least in the communities that really, really need it, which is primarily gay men in Europe, though not exclusively, and also keep banging away at those cost-effectiveness analyses, because in my experience, those are the things that really convince the health providers. Otherwise, we will essentially get private provision, because, of course, in many countries, things like contraceptives are only available privately. I mean, condoms are only available privately in many countries. So providers will turn around and say, why should we pay for this? We don't pay for the pill or something like that. So we do need to convince health providers that providing PrEP will have a positive public health effect, I think. Okay, I've got a question from Michael in Barcelona here. Actually, maybe you can answer it yourself while I'm looking for it, Michael. Can you unmute yourself? Ah, I found it. He says, my question would be for Valentina Anastasia, considering costs and cost effectiveness, are we looking only at individual behavior, while HIV incidence in a concentrated epidemic will make for lots of MSM the use of PrEP cost-effective? I think he's asking a question about, did you take into account the sort of herd immunity effect of PrEP, as it were?
So, yes, in our model, we do take into account the fact that by some of MSM, especially the most with high risk of getting infected with HIV, we are taking into account the fact that this reduction of people on PrEP, but as well on people who will not be on PrEP but will have this herd effect. So we are taking that into account, yes.
And we haven't done any costing, so but I wonder if I could take the chance to ask you, Valentina, in a response, how difficult it would be to extrapolate these findings to other European scenarios, such as the work that you've done. I mean, what inputs would you need to make them relevant in other places?
I know quite well the HIV epidemic in the UK, not so well in the rest of Europe. I think it really depends as well on how, on the HIV incidence in this different context. I think HIV incidence is really what is driving most of the cost effectiveness. So if we are able, I think in groups characterized by high HIV incidence, can extrapolate and conclude that it is cost effective. In other contexts, it will be more difficult.
Okay. Any more questions? No, just a last comment really from Amar, the Egyptian guy. Really about the increasing number of HIV patients he's seeing in what has previously been a low prevalence country. I think the lesson for that is that I think we can expect HIV to continue spreading into areas where it has not perhaps been before, which underlines the importance of really kind of making the prevention resources we have at our hands a lot more powerful. I think the in terms of the effect a really, really powerful STI prevention can have, one of my favorite models is the HPV vaccine, which in countries where it has been comprehensively introduced for young people, such as Australia, has brought the diagnosis of genital warts down to virtually nothing in young people, which shows that you can introduce a public health intervention in an STI which has a powerful effect on it, and course, happens with the Hep B vaccine too. But of course, PrEP is not a vaccine. And so we need to put, I think, extra effort into enabling people to take it, into developing longer-term formulations, which will be the subject of our third webinar on the 20th of November, and to continuing to research for new answers, such as ultimately a vaccine for HIV. So if anybody has any more questions, please ask them now. Otherwise, I'm going to say thank you very, very much to the presenters. I think those are three really, really good presentations, some of the best we've had. And thanks to the listeners for your very probing questions. I do have a question from Nicholas, who's put in the last-minute question. Nicholas, who's doing a lot of work in Germany, he's asking, who is funding the individual PrEP implementation studies that are going on in European countries? So I don't know if anyone is there from AmPrep or from the Belgian study or whoever who's able to answer that question, or whether Anastasia, for instance, knows this.
This is Anastasia. I don't know the specific funding mechanisms from the studies you mentioned. I think it's partnerships between national and local health department funding combined with, I think the free drugs are being provided by Gilead, but I'm not completely sure.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thanks very much. I thought I'd just get in Nick's question at the end there. Okay. Thanks very much, guys. We will send round, I think, is this right, Kevin, a URL for the recording.
Yes, we will.
We're able to do that. That's good. So you'll get an email saying this is where to hear the recording of the webinar. And do make a date for the next one on Friday the 16th of October to talk about treatment as prevention and related issues. And thank you all for coming.